Good morning. We live in an age of autonomy. We all enjoy personal freedoms, rights, liberties, even our own personal space. We don't like when people tell us what to do, how to act, what to think. Some of us may have issues with authority. I see you smiling and laughing. And our Torah, at first glance, would appear to be authoritarian. It's a book of rules. Do this, don't do that. Thou shalt not. And at first glance appears restrictive. And yet, the Mishnah in Avot says that there is no one as free as he who is engaged in Torah study. And this is based on a pasuk in Shmot Perek Lamed Bet, V'haluchot ma'ase elokim hema v'michtav michtav elokim hu charut al haluchot. The tablets were a product of Hashem. It's Hashem's hand, Hashem's writing. They were engraved charut on the tablets, on the luchot. And the Mishnah here in source number one, Avot Perek Vav Mishnah Bet, says, don't read charut carved into the tablets. Rather, read it as cherut. Freedom. She'ein lecha ben chorin ela misha osek b'talmud Torah. For there is no one as free as he who is engaged in the study of Torah. No one as free? How is the Torah about freedom? Again, it would appear to be restrictive. The Torah, at first glance, appears to be about submission to Hashem's will, Hashem's authority, authoritarian. And so this is something that modern man struggles with, and to be honest with you, this is something that I've struggled with in my own life, because I don't like people telling me what to do, how to think, how to act. I enjoy my freedom. I have issues with authority figures. I was a big troublemaker back in high school. Shh, don't tell anyone. And so I've struggled with this, you know, and so this morning, given that this Shabbat we will read about the experience at Har Sinai, I'd like to explore together with you a number of passages in rabbinic literature, in the Gemara, in the Sefarot HaMidrash, which describe the scene at Har Sinai and describe how the Jewish people received the Torah. And we'll see a number of descriptions which at first glance would appear to be in conflict with one another. And we'll see how really they describe this intimate relationship that we have with Hashem and His Torah, which is, as we'll see, a complex one, a complicated relationship, so to speak. So the Torah in Shmot Perek Yud Tet, which we'll read, Be'ezrat Hashem this Shabbat, describes the dramatic scene at Har Sinai, the thunder, the lightning, the thick cloud upon the mountain, the loud sound of the shofar that kept going and going and getting stronger, the smoke, the pillars of fire. And it describes there how the Jewish people stood at the foot of the mountain. Vayit yatzvu b'tachtit hahar. And again, simply it can be understood lefi pshuto shel mikra, on a simple level, according to the simple pshat, that the Jewish people stood at the foot of the mountain. However, we'll see in a moment a very powerful passage, a famous passage from the Gemara in Shabbat Daf Peichet. There's also a parallel passage in Masechet Avodah Zarah, and elsewhere in the Midrashic literature, it's quoted by Rashi in his comments to our parasha. Here in source number two, based on this pasuk, Vayitetzvu b'tachtit hahar, they stood literally at the foot of the mountain, but you could understand b'tachtit maybe to imply that they stood underneath the mountain. And so we have this famous statement of Rav Avdimi Bar Chama Bar Chasa, Melamed shekafa HaKadosh Baruch Hu aleihem et ahar kigigit. This pasuk can be understood to mean they stood underneath the mountain. Comes along Rav Avdimi, the son of Chama, the son of Chasa, that this pasuk teaches that Hashem held the mountain over their heads like a barrel, like a cask. Ve'amar lahem, and said to them, Im atem mekablim haTorah mutav, if you accept the Torah, good. V'im lav, but if not, oy vavoy, sham tehe kivuratchem. Here will be your graves. Wow. Very, very dramatic passage here. And in this famous description here, the Jewish nation seemingly is forced into accepting the Torah. This is a description of coercion. Here we have this threatening image of Hashem as tyrant, ready to crush us underneath the mountain if we do not accept the Torah. And of course the question is that how we accepted the Torah? Right? Is that how we became a nation? Is this how we entered into a covenant with Hashem? Right? How does this imagery make you feel? Anyone uncomfortable with this drasha? And it's important, and I chose to explore this together with you this morning because we've all seen images of religious coercion here in the modern state of Israel. And this is something that is always the topic of public discussion and debate and public conversation, and it expresses itself in different ways, especially here with this new Knesset, with a Knesset that is considered religious parties and right-wing parties. But we've all seen religious coercion here in Medinat Yisrael. We've seen groups wanting to impose their beliefs on others by force. And it shakes us to our very core. It shakes us. Right? Because we know deep down inside, that's not Yahadut, that's not Judaism. Okay? Now, the Gemara here in Shabbat and Daf Peichet continues, Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov said, Mikan Moda Rabba L'Oraita. Here you have a great protest, a great argument against the giving of the Torah, the receiving of the Torah, meaning if the Jewish people were coerced into it, right? So then maybe, and there's a lot to say about it, but it's beyond the scope of our discussion this morning, but maybe we are not obligated in Torah if our ancestors were forced into the covenant. But Amar Rava comes along and says, Afal pichen, nevertheless, hidur kabluha bimei Achashverosh. They came around and accepted the Torah again, maybe with their consent, in the generation or in the days of Achashverosh. The Purim story, which we will read very shortly, which describes how the Jewish people accepted upon themselves the holiday of Purim and the mitzvot associated with Purim, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim. But there's a famous drasha, Kimu ma'sha kiblu kvar, that they upheld what they had already accepted, meaning they made a renewed acceptance. And you know, you can interpret that in many different ways. We know that there was a lot of assimilation in the Babylonian exile during the reign of the Babylonians and in the Persian Median Empire. And these were people who, according to many, had already been given permission to come back to the land of Israel and start building the Holy Temple by King Cyrus. And yet, they were still stuck there in the Persian Empire, in Shushan, living it up. Okay? And there's a lot more to say, but again, it's beyond the scope of our discussion this morning. And by the end of the Purim story, the Jewish people had come together. They fasted for Esther. They've prayed. They've done tshuva. And they've accepted upon themselves, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim, Purim. But not only Purim. According to Chazal, they made a renewed acceptance to Torah. They re-accepted the Torah in those days. And so even if one would say, and this is what the Gemara here is saying, even if one would say that, yes, we were coerced into accepting the Torah the first time at Mount Sinai, but later on, many generations later, centuries later, we accepted it willfully, our own volition. We accepted it with consent. Okay? But I want to just return to this image of Hashem holding the mountain over our heads and forcing us to accept the Torah, because that's very troubling. I don't know, are you troubled by this image? Very troubling. It's very troubling for a number of reasons. Okay? Firstly, just based on the simple pshat of the Torah, based on the psukim in the Torah, what's problematic with this passage? Oh, na'aseh v'nishma, right? It seems to contradict what the Torah itself says about the revelation at Sinai. In Shmot Perek Yutet, Vaya'anu kol am yachdav, vaya'omru, kol asher diber Hashem na'aseh. Right? At least this week we'll read na'aseh, right? We will do. The Torah itself says that the Jewish people consented to receiving the Torah and obligated themselves. And then later in Perek Chof Dalet, Vayomru, Kol Asher Diber Hashem Na'aseh V'Nishma. We will do and we will listen. Na'aseh V'Nishma. We will do and we will listen. Perhaps the two most famous words in the entire Torah. So the Torah itself says that the Ma'amad Har Sinai, the experience at Mount Sinai, the revelation was one of consent. We accepted it. I mean, imagine, and not just we accepted it, but na'aseh v'nishma, we prefaced the nishma with the na'aseh. First, we will do, and then we will listen. We committed ourselves to the Torah before we even knew what we were getting into, right? And so that's why na'aseh v'nishma is so important. We'll see in a moment a passage in the Gemara about na'aseh v'nishma. But everyone knows na'aseh v'nishma, right? My six-year-old comes home from Gan this week, and she's going to know about na'aseh v'nishma. And kids this week, or sometimes maybe before Shavuot, they come home with these crowns. We'll see in a moment what that's based on, which say na'aseh v'nishma. We committed ourselves before we even knew what we were getting into. For me, it makes me think of when a parent asks you to sign something, right? Your mother or father says, honey, you know, I need you to sign this. Could you please sign this? Do you need to look it over with a fine-tooth comb? Do you tell your parent, you know what, let me first have my attorney look it over. I'm going to take this document and I'm going to have my attorney look at it, and then I'll sign it, right? Of course not. You sign it right away without even reading it. It's like what people do nowadays without even thinking. We click a button on the internet, on a website, or we download an application on our phone. We click a button. We accept the terms and conditions without even reading them. We don't even know what we're getting ourselves into. And sometimes that means a third party receiving our information, this company, this website, this Google, seeing our personal information, and we click accept the terms because we want access to the website, we want to use this application, and we don't even know what we're getting ourselves into. That's na'aseh v'nishma, right? Na'aseh v'nishma is about implicit trust. You sign that document that your parent asks you, assuming it's a healthy relationship, assuming it's a relationship based on trust. But you sign that document because that relationship is built on trust. You don't have to have your lawyer look it over, right? And similarly, we said na'aseh v'nishma because it is a relationship that's based on trust. So this image here in the Gemara, Shabbat Daf Peichet, of Hashem holding the mountain over our heads and forcing us to receive the Torah seems to be in conflict with what the Torah itself says, with the picture that the Torah presents of Ma'amad Har Sinai. And in fact, if you look at that very same page in Masechet Shabbat, right, just a little further down in the Gemara, the very same blot, the very same amud, okay? Here, it's source number 3. Darash Rabbi Simai. Rabbi Simai expounded, B'shashi gdimu Yisrael na'asel nishma. When the Jewish people prefaced the nishma with the na'asa, when they said na'aseh first, that we will do and only then we will listen. Bo shishim ribo shel malachei asharet. 600,000 ministering angels came, l'kol echad ve'echad mi'Yisrael, to each and every Jew, kishru lo shnei k'tarim, and they gave them each two crowns. Echad k'neged na'aseh, v'echad k'neged nishma, one for na'aseh and one for nishma. That's why sometimes these kids come home from Gan with these cardboard crowns, either on Parshat Yitro or before Shavuot, and sometimes those crowns have a double crown, right? One for na'aseh v'nishma, and one for nishma. The Kevan Shechatu Yisrael Yardu Mea Ve'esrim Ribo Malchei Chabala Upirkum. Oh, but when the Jewish people sinned with the golden calf, so then 1,200,000 angels of destruction came down and removed those crowns. Okay? But then the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Bishashi Gdimu Yisrael Na'aseh Lenishma. Yetztabat Kol Ve'amra Lehem. When the Jewish people said, we will do before, we will listen, a voice went forth from heaven, a heavenly voice exclaimed, Migila libanai razeh, who revealed to my children this sod, this secret, Shemalachei Asherit mishtamshim bo, which the ministering angels use, right? It's this incredible thing. Who told them this? So not only does this image of Hashem holding Mount over our heads contradict what is written in the Torah itself, but on the very same Amud, the very same page of the Gemara, a few lines down, the Gemara presents a very different image of what the experience at Mount Sinai was. Here it's one of consent. Not just consent, but one of obligation before we even knew what we were getting ourselves into. And in fact, we have many other statements in the Talmudic and Midrashic literature which would seem to contradict this image of coercion that we began with. The Mechilta, for instance, describes how the Jewish people accepted the Torah willfully and with joy. It describes Hashem not as tyrant ready to strike us with a mountain, but rather a zaken malei rachamim, an old man filled with mercy. And for me, this evokes the image of my grandfather, Alev HaShalom, whose yahrzeit is right before Purim, you know, giving me a gift with a smile, like a zaken malei rachamim. That's how Hashem, says the Medrash Mechilta, gave the Jewish people the Torah. And other Midrashim describe Har Sinai like a wedding. Right? Maybe we're familiar with these Midrashim, how Har Sinai was the wedding between Hashem and the Jewish people. If you take a look here at source number 4, this is a Mechilta, okay? The Pasuk says, Hashem Mi Sinai Ba. Hashem came to Sinai. It sounds like he came from Sinai. Hashem Mi Sinai Ba. So the Midrash says, it should have said, Li Sinai. Hashem went to Mount Sinai to meet us there and give us the Torah. But no, rather, Ella Hashem Mi Sinai Ba, where I've underlined here in source number 4, Lekabel et Yisrael kechatan zeshu yotzeli krat kala. Hashem came from Sinai. This Midrash darshins, Mi Sinai, like a chatan, comes to greet his kala. Okay? And a similar Midrash here in source number 5. Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu yatzal likratan kechatan hayotzel likrat kala. Ken HaKadosh Baruch Hu yatzal likratan liten lahem et haTorah. Okay? Again, this image of Hashem like bridegroom coming from Mount Sinai to greet the Jewish people. And based on these Midrashim, there's actually a custom. In fact, a lot of the customs from the modern Jewish wedding harken back to that first wedding that took place at Mount Sinai, the wedding between God and his bride, Israel. The torches or candles that the parents of the groom or those who escort the groom and bride are holding, they are supposed to invoke the lapide esh, the torches of fire at Mount Sinai. It's funny, a lot of times they get to the chuppah and they don't know what to do with them. They're holding these candles. You've seen this before. And then like, usually it's supposed to be the caterer. The caterer or the wedding planner is supposed to come up to the chuppah and take them. But sometimes the parents are still holding them. They don't know what to do with them. You gotta be careful, you know. The chuppah is flammable. But other customs, like even having, you know, bridesmaids, groomsmen, it's the Shoshvin, and it's like Moshe and Aaron escorted the Jewish people to this wedding. But here, These midrashim describe how Hashem came from Mount Sinai to greet his bride Israel, like a groom goes from the chuppah to greet the bride. And there's this custom, that maybe you've seen it before, where the chatan takes a few steps from the chuppah towards the kala as she's walking down the aisle. That's based on these midrashim, because this was the first wedding that took place, the wedding between God and his beloved bride Israel. Okay? And then you have other midrashim which describe how Hashem held the mountain over our heads, but not to threaten us with the mountain, but rather to protect us with the mountain. As I mentioned at the beginning of the class, in Shmot Perek Yutet, the Torah describes this very dramatic scene, this frightening scene at Har Sinai, the thunder, the lightning, the thick cloud, the smoke, the sound of the shofar, which kept getting louder and louder. And we know the Jewish people were frightened by Hashem's voice, right? And it's frightening, the same way many people this week, you know, were frightened to wake up to some tremors, some aftershock from that devastating earthquake in Syria and Turkey. Unfortunately, many, many people lost their lives over there. You know, Mika Amcha Yisrael, who is like the Jewish nation. The Jewish nation, the state of Israel, sends kochot to go rescue teams, to go and help. Incredible, incredible. You know, and these are not our friends there in Syria and even in Turkey. Okay, these are not our friends, but that is our role as an Or La Goyim. I digress. In any case, it's frightening to think of earthquakes. So imagine the scene at Har Sinai, earthquakes and thunder and lightning. So take a look here at the second paragraph in source number 4. This is also from the Mechilta. Vayitzvu, what does it mean they stood underneath the mountain? They stood. Vayitzvu for the Midrash implies that they huddled together. Nitzafafu, they hugged and huddled closely to one another. They huddled together. Milamein shayu Yisrael mityar'im mipnei hazikim, mipnei hazvaot, mipnei ra'amim, mipnei habrakim habayim. The Jewish people there at Har Sinai were cowering. They were afraid, so they huddled together because there was thunder and lightning and earthquakes. All of these things. B'tachtit ahar, underneath the mountain. Milamein shenitlash ahar mimkomo v'kirvu v'amdu tachat ahar. Here, B'tachtit ahar, underneath the mountain, doesn't mean that Hashem held it over and threatened them to drop it on them. No, but they stood underneath the mountain, meaning the mountain was protecting them. The mountain was uprooted in order to protect them. V'kirvu v'amdu tachat ahar. So they gathered together and stood underneath the mountain. And then the Midrash continues with the pasuk from Shir HaShirim, Yonati b'chagvei haselah, which describes my dove in the clefts of the rock. I don't know if you've ever seen, but sometimes birds during a storm will take shelter. Okay? We have a hen. Her name is Marshmallow. We started raising chickens during the pandemic, during the lockdown. Everyone went a little crazy. We have this nice little gina. We started doing some gardening, and we learned all about raising backyard chickens, and we started raising chickens. So during the storm over the last few days, our hen Marshmallow has decided to take refuge by the entrance to our home, okay, right underneath this this canopy, and that's where she's perching. So in Shir HaShirim, in Perek Bet, it describes how my dove takes refuge in the clefts of the rock, and there, again, is this image, not of Har Sinai being held over us in order to threaten us, but here Har Sinai being held over us in order to protect us, like a bird finds refuge in a cave or in the clefts of a rock. Okay? And, you know, it's almost this image of protection, almost in a motherly way. Hashem is, so to speak, in this midrash, putting his arms around us, so to speak, protecting us with the mountain, nurturing us almost in a motherly way. So, based on what we've seen so far, the question is, which one is it? Right? What was the experience at Sinai like? Was it one of coercion and force, this threatening image of the mountain over our heads? Or was it one of choice, consent? Na'aseh v'nishma. We chose the Torah. We committed ourselves even before knowing what we were getting into. Is the mountain over our heads a threatening image, or is it a chuppah? Right? In these midrashim, which describe Har Sinai as the chuppah between God and the Jewish people, so the mountain over our heads is a chuppah, is a wedding canopy, a symbol of divine love. Which one is it? Is the mountain over our heads this threat, right? Hashem will drop it on us should we choose not to accept the Torah? Or is the mountain over our heads a chuppah, a wedding canopy? Is Hashem a tyrant, a vengeful God, or is Zaken Malei Rachamim giving us the Torah with a smile in an almost grandfatherly way? A mother protecting her dove in the clefts of the rock with Har Sinai. Which one is it? So, lichora, at first glance, these midrashim are sotrim zetze. They would appear to be in conflict with one another. Right? So which one is it? What was our experience at Har Sinai? How did we receive the Torah? How did we enter into this covenant? The answer really is that it's both. Right? And these various midrashim, which appear at first glance to be in conflict with one another, to contradict one another, no, rather they convey and express two different elements in our relationship with Hashem and our relationship to His Holy Torah. They express a dialectic, a healthy tension that's inherent in every relationship. Because in every relationship there's choice and consent and communication and intimacy and love. But there's also commitment. There are obligations, there are responsibilities, there are expectations. And you have to give in a relationship. Those of us who've been married for many years, my wife and I just celebrated 20 years this past summer. You know what I mean. Sometimes you're tired, but when your wife asks you to take the garbage out, it's something you have to do. And in my neighborhood, that means climbing up, 70, 80 steps. We live in Harnof, below street level. And, then walking another block or two to the dumpster. Baruch Hashem, I have teenage boys, and I get them to do it when they're home. But a relationship is about giving. It requires hard work and commitment. In fact, in Hebrew, the word for love, ahava, comes from the word hav, which means to give. It's about giving. And sometimes it means about doing something that I don't want to do. And that's not easy, especially today, when people are very concerned with themselves and their needs first and foremost. And unfortunately, that's why many relationships fail, because today, people are very selfish. Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, Zatzal, once said, you used to see snack foods, I'm trying to think of the exact example he gave, but he said everything nowadays is about me, like bisli, bis is a bite, right? Bisli, my bite, give it to me. And then then he said, you have the iPhone, right, and the iPad, and the iMac, and the iBook, and the iThis, and the iThat. It's about the me, right? So this is hard. This is hard, and I think this is why modern man struggles with the notion of the Torah as an authority, as authoritarian, okay? Because today people just want that love element of the relationship, and they're not willing to commit to the obligations. They're not willing to commit to the na'aseh v'nishma. And even though we struggle with this, these varying midrashim, which at first glance appear to be in conflict with each other, appear to contradict one another, convey these two elements to the relationship which are so vital. Har Sinai as the mountain over our heads, right, that conveys the sense of obligation, right, the sense of commitment. And Har Sinai over our heads as a chuppah, that of course is the intimacy, the love, that's the meaning, that's the joy. Maybe you'd say that's the chassidus in the relationship. But you have to have both for the relationship to last. And I'll circle back to this in a few moments. One of the themes in the thought of the Rav, Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, one of the great leaders of Orthodoxy in America in the 20th century, is that halacha requires at times for man to surrender. Right? Halacha conquers man. And you find this in a number of places in the thought of Rav Soloveitchik. Sometimes I might want to do something, but the halacha dictates that I cannot, that I have to submit myself to Hashem's will. Halacha requires of man submission. As the Mishnah in Avot says, to place Hashem's will, his ratzon, before my ratzon. Be mivatel, nullify, cancel my ratzon before Hashem's ratzon, and then ultimately make, the Mishnah continues, make Hashem's will, make his ratzon into my ratzon. Right? But that's a process. We speak of ol malchut shamayim, the yoke of heaven. Right? It's a relationship, but it's also a yoke. There's a responsibility. There's a weight on our shoulders. Right? There's a weight on us. And we refer to our service of God as avodat Hashem. It's an avoda. It's servitude. But this concept of submission is not easy for modern man. This concept of surrender. However, if you look at it carefully, you know, if a person is truly in love with someone, then they're willing to surrender. Right? Doesn't mean that you're a doormat to be trampled on. And I think that's what's difficult for people. They think if I surrender myself, well, that means that I'm a doormat and I'm going to get stepped on. No. But if you truly love someone and are willing to surrender, doesn't mean you're a doormat. It means that you want to give. Okay? And our relationship to Hashem and to His Holy Torah require these two elements. It's Har Sinai as coercion and Har Sinai as consent. Okay, it's that commitment, right? It's that obligation, but it's also that love, that intimacy. And if we don't convey this nuanced understanding, if we fail to convey this complex relationship, both sides to the coin, both elements to the relationship, then you won't have Jewish continuity. If you don't teach commitment, you will not have Jewish continuity. And I think that's what the Gemara means when it says that if you do not accept it, Sham tehei kivuratchem, here is going to be your graves. Not literally. Doesn't mean literally that Hashem was going to drop the Torah, drop the mountain rather. You don't want to drop the Torah, then you have to fast, right, for 40 days. It doesn't mean that Hashem was going to drop the mountain on our heads at Sinai. What it means is if you don't convey this element of the relationship, if it's all just about the meaning and the joy and the beauty and the love and the intimacy, but you fail to convey this sense of commitment and responsibility, Sham tehei kivuratchem, so here are going to be your graves. You're not going to have continuity. You're not going to successfully pass on the tradition to subsequent generations if it's not about a commitment, if it's not about responsibility. Okay? It's just going to be a graveyard. What is a graveyard? A graveyard is a monument to something which once was but is no longer living. There's no longer life. There's no longer vitality. A living, breathing, healthy Judaism requires an understanding of this nuanced, complex relationship, these both elements, this duality. And I think if we appreciate this, it helps to make our relationship with Hashem and His Holy Torah one that is honest and sincere, one that has depth to it, and one that is imbued with meaning and purpose and richness and fullness. Okay, I'll take any questions. If not, have a wonderful day. Stay dry, stay warm, stay safe. And we will see you all, Be'ezrat Hashem, next week.